Hello and welcome along to this week's RTE Rugby Podcast, and a busy rugby podcast for you today. A little bit later on in the show, I will be chatting to a couple of different Munster out halves. Jack Crowley and Cade Flannery are going to be on the line, and fair to say, plenty to talk about with Jack after the Autumn Nation series. First, though, we are going to recap that Autumn Nation series for Ireland and look ahead to the Champions Cup, which starts this weekend. Johnny Murphy is with me. And Johnny, I think it sums up the rugby season we've had so far, where four Autumn Nation series games, four tests in as many weeks for Ireland, and we're straight in with the Champions Cup. Nothing in between, no messing around. Like, this rugby season is just relentless, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's probably difficult for the lads. Generally, you know, after an autumn series, they kind of get a week to kind of get acclimatized back into club. Some of them have had a couple of days off. Then obviously with the 150th game, it prolonged their, with four games, and then get into, you know, usually you'd have some guys who are on the bench for the last international game that would, you know, come back in and maybe start the following week, and then you'd have that week break. So they kind of have to hit the ground running, really, in terms of getting guys back in the system, back into calls. And like straight away, you know, after Saturday, they have to report on Monday and get ready to rock, particularly, you know, the Friday and Saturday night guys across the board. So, yeah, look, it's thick and fast, but I suppose it doesn't give them any time to think, you know, or reflect if they might have had some individuals, if they felt, you know, they had a disappointing series, or, you know, high, even the guys on the high, they need to double down and get straight back into process in the province.
Yeah, it does make me worry ever so slightly about maybe some of the team sheets we might see over the Christmas block, because the players aren't getting the break now at the start of December where they normally would have. Does it mean they're going to have to get an extra one over the Christmas New Year block? Now, I know there's no URC games on New Year's weekend, so that probably is one clear weekend where teams can rest players around. But if you look at Munster, for example, Tadhg Byrne played every minute of the Autumn Nation series and was heavily involved as well for Munster's games leading up to it, because they absolutely needed him out there because they had so many injuries. Likewise, Leinster, Joe McCarthy, Andrew Porter, Caelan Darris and Josh van der Fleer as well, all would have started every single game out of those four. Like, are they potentially going to have to take a little break during one of these Champions Cup games? Maybe, look, we'll get to that in a few minutes, but I'll go straight.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd say a lot of those guys, particularly that down week in, as you say, the New Year's week, you'll probably find that a lot of those internationals probably get a full week off potentially on the Christmas week. And then they'd be back in and training, you know, be it a kind of a pre-season or deload week, you know, health, you know, kind of mainly S&C based that New Year's, and then back into it then, you know, like a 2 week block there where there's no games can freshen up plenty of people in that time, particularly if, you know, if they get that Christmas week off from an international perspective, that they then, you know, fully off, that they completely unwind with their families and hopefully then be refreshed for the next round of games and then into the, into the Six Nations.
On Saturday then, Ireland 22, Australia 19. I think it was a match that kind of summed up the entire month, really, where got there in the end, but it was a lot more difficult than it needed to be, in large parts down to Ireland's own making.
Yeah, I think, as you said, it was a bit of a common theme throughout. They kind of hit their straps and fits and starts. Like, they, you know, when they look good and they're playing on top and they're, getting numbers to break down defensively, they look very, very good. But then, you know, handling errors really cost them, and, you know, 20 plus handling errors, you know, or turnovers is not a really good stat to have. and it's something that has been a common theme throughout. You look at the Argentina game, you know, you felt in the first half, that's it. They're going to put a 60-minute performance together. Obviously, you know, 60 minutes is going to be good enough to win. A team is always going to have a purple patch at some stage. But then the second half, they didn't really fire a shot. New Zealand game, 10 minutes after, 5 minutes pre-halftime, 10 minutes after halftime, you're thinking, right, here we go. But then they just let the momentum seep away from them through inaccuracies, be it handling errors. Line out was a big issue at the moment, and particularly how Ireland want to play and launch. It kind of happened in all the games, really, and that's something that they very much need to try and figure out now in the next, in the next 8 to 10 weeks pre England.
The handling errors is the element of it that seems the most difficult circle to square in all of it, because I think like something we would have said of Andy Farrell's Ireland over the last 2-3 years is that their skill level and execution and accuracy was so high. Was like that, that was one of the big reasons why they were doing as well as they are. And they don't seem to be trying anything radically different to what they were trying, which is what makes the handling errors a little bit more confusing. That, these aren't born from a new kind of attacking shape where people are still getting used to the positioning of teammates and things like that. So a pass might go a little bit astray, or, someone might be 2 yards behind on their run, so they're reaching out for a pass a little bit more. It seems to be, their game plan seems to be broadly similar to what it has been in recent years, but the error count and the drops are just so high. Like, 26 handling errors at the weekend, 16 of them in the first half. Like, it's just remarkable.
Yeah, and you listen to Andy Farrell after the game, and he's always very open, very honest, and fairly bang on. He's used the term a couple of times, this honestly, that, we had to get over ourselves a bit. Does that lend itself to people potentially trying too hard or letting those mistakes kind of affect them too much as they go on? Beelham had two in very, very close, proximity to each other on Saturday. Is that not being able to bank those mistakes and just simply watch them and move on? Is there a bit of a hangover after mistakes, and then does it seep in through the team? Reference this before, the guys that are still involved from a World Cup perspective, is this still, 14, 15 months later, still a bit of a World Cup hangover because they didn't get over the line there? Is there just a level of anxiety? I said this before, that just when a mistake comes, it's like, oh, we can't do that again. And then obviously, it's like playing golf. Don't hook the ball. What do? You hook the ball. Like, it's stay away from the water. You're going to land it square in the middle of the lake. Like, so, is that something that they work on? I just find it interesting that in a couple of post-match interviews, he's used that term, we needed to get over ourselves. Mm. And is that being able to watch that they're not as good as washing mistakes as they were pre-World Cup? It's an interesting dynamic, but it's something that they have to fix that, and they have to also fix, I think, their line out is definitely something that they need to fix too.
Yeah, let's move to that. So, because they lost 5 throws out of 24 on Saturday, it was like Joe McCarthy made the point after the game. We were speaking to him, and he was asked about the line out, and he said, he stated obviously there were 24 lineouts, which, like, even in modern rugby where there are a lot, like, that is an enormous amount of lineouts. Normally you might be thinking maybe 15, 16, 17 mark. 24 was an incredible number to have. And he made the very interesting point that for the last few of them, they actually started making up a few calls on the fly because they had gone through their set list twice already. Now, I think it was probably the quote was probably misinterpreted, I think, by some people out there who got the impression that Ireland were making up line-out calls on the fly all afternoon. Like, this was very much down to the last few when they had gone through their menu a couple of times already. And it goes to show, obviously, I suppose, the level of detail there is there that, and if you look at their last few lineouts, they were, they actually won some of those. And these are all they're little variations on what the original call is of, like, you know, and everything's communicated properly. But there is still a problem there, losing five of them. And we saw on Saturday as well, some are down to throws, some are down to bad time of lift. And then there was one in particular where they didn't even get someone off the ground.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Like that's systematic. People either clarity in a call, be it the chain of that call from 10 line out jumper, front of line out to hooker. There's one thing. But then again, it's the missed lift. We had a couple incredible touch finders at the weekend that are bang on 5 meter where you don't think you're going to be. Walking to that line out from outside the 10 and they're bang on the 5 meter, that should be right. We're going to score here and have that energy. Have that. Everyone should be so clear in their roles. And the missed lift, and that leads to an overthrow. That's not an overthrow, it's a missed lift. And that's, I think, the biggest issue. I think for me is that it's not necessarily everyone knowing their roles. Be it is there, and look, I'm no line out guru in any way, shape, or form. Is there an issue at the gap? Are we getting a bit kind of bullied there in the gap? That there does seem to be, that Ireland are always stepping off. If they're, even Keane Healy, this was like, look at this, like they're on top of us, they're on top of us. Then he's forced to move off. So there's a lot at play there, and in the line out there's so many intricacies in that, and they all have to be bang on for you to win the ball exactly where you want it when they're competing as aggressive as teams are against Ireland in that space, because they know that Ireland really want to launch off their line outs. So yeah, it's just something that they have to double down on. They have to get it right for the Six Nations.
And it's one of those areas of the game as well that it's when you do have issues, it's so hard to, well, particularly at elite level, I would say, it's so hard to actually correct them in the short term because from an opposition point of view, if you're going into a game knowing that your opponent has a line out where there have been issues and they've been under pressure a lot, you're going to be more aggressive in going after it. So the more weakness you show, the more an opposition is actually going to target it and try go after you, and it has this kind of a snowball effect as well. And you obviously mentioned there how important the line out launch is for Ireland. And I think we actually, like, one of the positives around the line out we did see is that one thing Andrew Goodman has brought is some really, really interesting and nice strike plays off it. So that when they actually have got the line out proper and they have got it working, it has been a really, really dangerous tool for them. We saw a couple of tries in the previous games where it was that one where Gus McCarthy or Ronan Keller were sweeping around the back, and Ronan Keller either went himself or Gus McCarthy popped the ball back in for Caelan Darris and scored against Fiji. And then likewise, there was another lovely little move in the, I think it was late in the first half against Australia on Saturday, where it was this beautiful peel, this very, very intricate peel back for Joe McCarthy, who was coming around the back on an overthrow. And that got Ireland great yards as well. So when they have actually been able to get that line out right, they're creating dangerous opportunities.
Yeah, massively. And you look at I love the ones in the 22 that they score off, because everyone's expecting them all there. And it's such a good tool to be able to do that. And then when teams start analysing, it softens them all up then as well, because people are potentially expecting a peel. And it's not something we see very often. Teams do those peels or off the top on the wraps, when it looks like teams are, so it's it I'm really enjoying that aspect of it. And yeah, like as you said, the two main things that Ireland need to get into their flow in attack are their line out launches, but then also their multi-phase. And teams are, whether they're figuring them out or that's again, that's not fully firing either. And defense teams for me are, they're keeping a lot of bodies on their feet. They're not necessarily contesting the breakdown unless teams are kind of getting away with it, whether they're folding into the channel, stopping our inside cleaner, and then getting on the ball. But when teams put two people in, they're either really slowing it down or they're getting turnovers. And if they're not, really good knowledge at the breakdown, they're having 14 guys on their feet. And that's cutting down the space that they want to go to. And then it comes very much collision based then, because it's power v power and three guys are running into three guys. So, you know, that is something that, again, they have to figure out. Ireland of old, when, I know you can't do it anymore, but, you know, when Joe, the deep clean caused a lot of people, hurt a lot of people on the fold. You know, when Ireland were flying pre-World Cup, they were taking a lot of people off their feet. So it was kind of 12. Sometimes they'd be tackling 11 guys because they were killing threats at the breakdown, getting them off their feet. So it's something that they just need to kind of adapt and try and kind of propel themselves back into where they were.
Yeah, I think that, like, it kind of leads on from the lineout where they're scoring so much from their lineout launch, and that multi-phase just probably isn't as threatening as it has been in the last few years as well. Part of that then, specifically on Saturday, Sam Prendergast obviously started. One of the criticisms that Sam would have got at the weekend was that he specifically wasn't a breaking threat as much for Australia, and they, you know, after a little while they were happy to sit back and let him pass and let him kick, and they were kind of able to distribute the defenders each way. Is that the next step for him, to add that extra layer to his game so that he does become more of a breaking threat and he can keep a defense a little bit more honest?
Yeah, I'd say so. And that's one of the things that he'll probably add, that he is going to add. And the more game time he gets for Leinster and Ireland going forward, you have to be a threat on the ball and keep your leg speed up there. I think at the moment, he is probably he's the reason he is different to the other two is because they are, you know, running threats. I wouldn't have said Rothburn would have been a running threat either. So they have that balance and they can mix and match in that position. I think at the moment, his passing game, bringing other people into it is probably better than the other two. His kicking game, attacking kicking game, cross field is very, very good. And we saw a couple of those this weekend that brought people into the game that get us good go forward.
Yeah, I thought his attacking kicking game on Saturday, and even as well, like just simply off penalties, he was so aggressive with some of those penalties.
Yeah.
With the depth he was getting, I thought that element of his game was absolutely lights out on Saturday.
Yeah, and I think the one blotch on is probably the, and it was a real weird connection. It was an anomaly for him, I think, in the sense that I don't know whether the referee spooked him or not, because the referee, just as he started his warm up, the ref goes 5 seconds or 10 seconds, you know, like is counting him down, and you know sometimes when you're not expecting that can, but you know. Like, he should be getting that. You know, he's a kicker that gets those the majority of the time. That's probably the one blot on his kicking game from the weekend. And regardless of whether it was the right, like, he should be knocking that over. Like, it's that, like, that's just goes without saying. So I think that running element is something that he probably does need to add. He was getting a lot of flack for His D stuff. I thought his D was very good this weekend. He's a try-saving tackle over in the corner. Okay, it's not. And I don't think he's ever going to be a banger in terms of defensive hits. And, you know, but, you know, he got in the passing channel a bit. And then, you know, with that really good cover tackle and then good cover on the back to get that intercept off their line break. But, yeah, I think Ireland are in a good spot, regardless of all the stuff that's going on in the media about Jack this, Kieran Foley that, Sam this. I think it's just a time that we're in a good spot and we've created a lot of competition there now. And you can make a case for all three. And I think the impetus that Jack gave coming off the bench the other day was really good. Really, really good.
He looked like a determined man when he came
on.
As did Craig Casey, obviously, as well.
Yeah.
But you could see it within seconds of coming on.
Yeah.
How determined he was to get on the ball and start going forward with it.
Yeah. It was really, really good. And I said it before, and you know, I get crap on all of the, who will you coach? Yeah, but I've openly said that he's probably not first choice when it comes to England. At this present time, right here, right now, picking a team, is Simon Easterby going to go Jack Crowley if he was to pick and his hands forced? I would say probably yes. But there's 8 weeks of unbelievable rugby to be had. Sam has to grab that jersey in Leinster if he gets it this weekend. And then it's a fight between two guys. Mm-hmm. So let's see what's what. So, yeah, but I think it's a really good spot for Ireland. But yeah, people just need to kind of get on with it now and be like, right, well, you can have your arguments on the last week in January and see who's picked in. And that's going to be off a body of work that's done within their province and see what happens.
27th of December at Thomond Park. I think a lot of people would love to be seeing Sam Prendergast and Jack Crowley starting in the opposite 10 numbers.
And like, that's what we want. That's what we want. You know, want to go down to that game and it be like, you know, the Stephens Day fixtures of old. And it, to be fair, that's starting to get back to that level.
It has been, yeah, the last couple of years, yeah.
Yeah, now it's like, right, well, here we go. It's, back to the times of Raj and Johnny and all this, you know. So, right, let's go after it then. And, you know, the Joey Carberry going down and all of that, like, throw all that history in it and let's sit back and enjoy it. And let's get after it.
Yeah. And I think, in fairness, like, the IRFU made a misstep last week just with the way they handled that whole media situation. Like, we were talking about it on the podcast last week that... Well, Jack Crowley was up for media yesterday. You know, more or less, that's an indication he's going to be in. And the fact that he was held back for Saturday's publications as well, it probably just ramped up the situation a lot more than it needed to be. Now, it's not always a guarantee that a player is going to be starting. It obviously happens every now and again, but I think given the player that was involved on the day, it felt a very bizarre step to have him up for media when he wasn't going to be starting at the weekend. We'll move on to some of the wrap up the Ireland stuff from this campaign. Overall, what players have come out of this month with a higher stock price than when they went in? And are there any, do you think, whose stock price has probably dropped over the last few weeks?
Well, obviously Tam has won, his stock has gone up. I think Craig Casey. I think the opportunities he's got, the pace he's added to games that he's played in and featured in. I think, and again, brilliant impact and pace both this weekend. I think he's been really good.
On the pace with Craig Casey, is it a case even as well that it is a more refined pace? That, like, he has always had the pace, but he's now using it.
Yeah, I think
he's channeling it better than he used to be.
Yeah, I think his understanding of tempo is really good now. When to quicken, when to slow. And that sometimes can take a while. You know, at schoolboy level, I talk about it all the time. Trying to understand and feel tempo in game or feel momentum shifts when you quicken, when you slow. And when you slow the ball down as a nine can actually probably be even more important as when you quicken up the pace, because it shows a greater understanding and, you know, pushing the limit on what the referees are calling out with that 5 seconds. You know, you no longer have 10 seconds. It's 5 seconds on the button and he's blowing the whistle. He's counting you down. So it's taking the most out of that. And I think that's what he's now in that, you know, standard where he has that massive understanding of tempo and when to quicken and what energy he brings. So I think he's won. Gus McCarthy, obviously. I think Jamie Osborne, his cameos before he got injured, I think that's a frustration. I also think Jacob Stockdale really could have got back in the straps. Again, a really unlucky injury. Yeah, I think they'd be the kind of standouts for me in that. And I think we saw someone, we saw what Cormac Isichuku can get to and what opportunity, a big dynamic six in those wider channels, a sample of what could be with someone like him. So yeah, I think they've it's been good, really good for those guys.
Last question on Ireland then, just the general prospects for that first half of 2024 when Andy Farrell is away, specifically the Six Nations, I would say as well, because the summer tour is going to be much more of a developmental one. I was chatting through the match over the weekend with a couple of friends, and we were talking about what's happening next year, and there were two camps that people were setting up shop in. Number one is Ireland have had an up and down year, still a kind of remnants of a World Cup hangover in there, and now Farrell is going away to go work with the Lions for 7 8 months, and it's going to be a tough, it could be the makings of a tough year for Ireland. The other camp was Ireland are looking a little bit stale at the moment compared to what they have in the last couple of years, and is Andy Farrell going away and everyone getting a little break from each other actually not the worst thing in the world? Have you any idea what camp
Yeah,
you would
I'm
fall
in
in?
the second camp. I think it's going to be a really good refresh for everyone. And I think the token of a Lions tour for those guys that are in that puts extra emphasis on the Six Nations and performances throughout the Six Nations. But also gives an opportunity for a certain level of experimentation. Allows Andrew Godman get more reps and more, keep firing and pushing the attack forward. And this 6 to 9 months gives them an opportunity to really blood guys that are going to be guys that are seasoned internationals by the time the next World Cup comes around. And that's the view that I think can be taken, that I would like to be seen taken out of. Six Nations is going to be massive in a Lions year anyway, so it's not going to be free changes or wholesale changes or but with what the summer tour, and then it gives you an opportunity to blood five or six guys Six Nations time, and then really kick on in a 2 year window to move on. And I think the Irish management, in terms of how proactive they have seen to have been over the last, number of years, I think they will really push on in that fashion.
So that's the Ireland chat wrapped up. Champions Cup kicks off this weekend. Starting at Munster because they were in the news yesterday. They're taking on Stade Francais Saturday evening, Thomond Park, live on RT2 and RT Player, and live commentary on RT Radio 1 as well. Starting to see some good news coming from Munster in the last couple of weeks with the couple of coaching contract renewals. Last week, we had Alex Nankivell signing a new contract there the other day as well. And then yesterday, the news that Chris Boyd is coming in, a performance consultant until, at the very least, until the end of January. Will probably be working in bits and bobs over the rest of the season, though, as well. A vastly experienced New Zealander. Anybody you speak to from Northampton Saints during his time between 2018 and 2022 gives him huge, huge credit for last year's premiership win, even though he had left by then, because he was the guy who was bringing through the bulk of that Northampton team when they were young players, and also helped develop Phil Dawson into what is now a very, very impressive coach.
I think I played Sam Bestie quite well. I think Chris Boyd is the guy that assembled that coaching ticket, started that regeneration of Northampton Saints, and brought all of those guys, was the mastermind of it all. And the esteem that Sam would hold him in, and like having played, I always knew Sam was going to be a coach. He's an incredibly gifted coach. And for him to have the respect that he does and speak about Boyd in that fashion, that carries all the weight in the world for me. So I think brilliant. He will also fit an attacking style that Mike Prendergast has very well, because Sam and Mike, although not the same, would be quite similar in their viewpoints of the game and how they would like to play the game. Both want to play and very young, proactive coach. So I think that will gel automatically very well. There's a lot of similarities between, Phil Dowson and Dennis Leamy as well, in terms of their age profile, what they're, and what can be done and developed. So I think it's a very astute signing, and someone that, if it went really well and he came in as a DOR or head coach, that you'd be like, well, that's actually a really, really good signing. And might not be the bells and whistles of, people talking about Stuart Lancaster or all, but would be an incredibly astute, well-fit individual into the dynamic that is there already. So I would be really, really excited to see where that can develop and how it develops over what is a massive 2 months for Munster.
Yeah, and obviously he can give Munster decent insight into Northampton, who they play later on in January anyway. But in the immediate short term, they got a win at the weekend, Munster, so that's up on the board. Maybe a little bit frustrated it wasn't a bonus point win, but they were fairly depleted with internationals away and things like that. So it was important to just get the win. Champions Cup this weekend, though, Stade Francais at home. You do not want a repeat of last year where you just fluff the lines in the opening day against Bayonne and ultimately don't win either of your two home games. Particularly now though, they're away to Cass next Friday night. You do not want to be going down to Cass on a Friday night in December needing to chase a result. This isn't a vintage Stade Francais team. Like, Munster have to put the points on the board this weekend.
Yeah, I think so. But look, half five Saturday, Thomond Park, European Cup weekend, prime time. It's people go for a few beers at lunch and then they kick in into the stadium. And having been there on those nights like Northampton and all of those, it's incredible. It's an experience that someone should put on their bucket list to make sure that they do. So, but they need to create that energy. They need to engage early with the people that are coming out, the supporters, and give them something to shout about early. And if they do that, then they can really, double down and push on. If a level of anxiety gets into them and then gets into the crowd, it can be quite difficult to change that. But yeah, I think with everything, how people have spoken about them, what happened over the last, 6 weeks, the Jack Crowley stuff, all of that lends itself to backs against the wall, old school Munster performance that is like, this is what Munster European Cup rugby is about. And I think that's the type of performance that I'd expect, to be honest.
Leinster away to Bristol on Sunday evening. Interesting to see if Jordy Barrett gets his debut as well. He appears to be back fully fit. He was training yesterday. He's been in situ with the province since the tail end of last week. Just what Leinster need right now. They've been looking a little bit thin, a little bit weak this season. Only the 7 wins in a row to start.
I do think that I think probably Jamie Osborne's injury kind of helps. I don't think he's going to be back this weekend.
No, he's
Helps
not.
it. Yeah, so that helps the selection kind of thing where people can get off that. Oh, why you're now obviously already. So that helps. But you would imagine that he is going to feature. Does it allow them go 6-2, but they can do that anyway with Frawley. It's going to be a really interesting selection, down to who they're going to pick at 10, all the way back to the bench and what their they're going to look at. Like with someone like Jordy Barrett, you could even have himself and Kieran Frawley on the bench because Barrett can play anywhere and so can Frawley. So you can kind of figure, you can manipulate it whatever way you want, really. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out. Bristol are a really good side. Play a lot of ball. It's going to be a really good game. Bristol good weekend, good win last weekend. Spoiling Joe Marler's departure. But yeah, this is not a it's not a gimme. It is, and people are very much like kind of a forgotten game. It's on a Sunday. It's probably the worst kickoff time of the week at 5:30 on a Sunday. I think it's going to be pretty tight. Like it's it, you know I am a betting man, so I would fancy them to get an away win to start off, but certainly not an easy start for them, and you take taking Bristol at your likely at your peril really would be my thing there,
And I like, as you said, people might take Bristol lightly just because they haven't really come up against the Irish provinces except for Connacht, really, in the last few seasons at Champions Cup level as well. But second in the Premiership, they're scoring 36 points a game. Like, they are an absolute relentless attacking force, and essentially you need your wits about you to go up against them. And it's going to be really interesting, obviously, to see Jack Nienaber's very, very aggressive defence, which has been really good with Leinster this season, come up against that Bristol attack, which is scoring tries for fun, sort of the unstoppable force meets the immovable object sort of thing about it.
Definitely. I think a lot comes down to kind of breakdown and the second efforts that you see that Leinster put in a lot at the breakdown. That'll force extra numbers from the Bristol attack to get into the breakdown, which affects everyone's shape because you lose an extra back, you lose two extra forwards, they're not in the shape that they're supposed to be. So I think those second efforts going to be really, really important. And it's how Bristol go about getting around that. Are they going to back themselves to pass around it, or are they going to kick a bit to get around it? So I think, look, closes the weekend with a very, very good game to finish.
Just final couple of points. Ulster away to Toulouse. They're also on Sunday. Like, that's about as tough a start as you're going to get, away to Toulouse on the opening weekend.
Yeah, it's very hard. Injuries, obviously, aplenty. The lack of a scrum is a big worry. Look, they're going to have to try and stay in the fight as much as they can on Sunday and be real dogged and try and drag them into an arm wrestle and frustrate them and get them off their pedestal and they're going to have to drag them down off a level, which can be very difficult over there. But it's probably the toughest start you could be given, to be honest, particularly with the amount of injuries they have.
Yeah, and then add into the fact as well, they're playing Bordeaux next week as well. Now, I know Munster obviously starting with two French teams back to back, but Ulster are up against probably the two best French teams at the moment in Toulouse and Bordeaux, and the first one of those is at home. If you're mapping out the results of the competition, if Ulster can get in and out of Toulouse on Sunday with 1 point, it's probably a reasonable return. As well as, bear in mind, as well as you mentioned, the injuries they have, Jacob Stockdale coming back from the Autumn Nation series, etc. Get that point on the board and see where it goes. Because you've got, two games against the Premiership sides, Exeter and Leicester, in the new year, where they might fancy themselves to pick up more points. Get a point this week, really go after next week against Bordeaux, and they're in a reasonable position.
Yeah, I think that's very much they're the that will be a great return for them.
Finally, then, Connacht is home to Zebre on Saturday. That's in the Challenge Cup. An ideal opportunity for them to get some minutes into legs of players that haven't really seen too much game time this season. Pete Wilkins said yesterday they've given all their internationals a week off. Well, a down week, as the professionals would say, not a week off. No one gets a week off. Even Cian Prendergast as well, who only had one appearance off the bench. So they're clearly holding back some of the key players, but it puts them in a very good position URC wise for those derbies over Christmas, where they probably will be able to field their best side 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, and I think that's it's a good tactic. You imagine, 5 points on the board this weekend gives everyone a chance to refresh, and then also give guys, from last week's team to this week's team, 2 games on the block to then be good to kind of move forward with the returners from Ireland to really bounce into the second game and then into Christmas time. So, yeah, they're in a good spot, but it's important that they get those 5 points on the board, and it's also really good for those guys that might have even played an A game to get them back into the swing of things last week, this week. So I think it's good. It's a nice start for them.
Yeah, I think Pete Wilkins was hinting it's probably going to be a similar enough team selection this weekend to what they put out against the Bulls, because I think there's a few players he wants to see right, a few wrongs. But next week is where that you'll probably see a lot more changes, because they've a later game down in Perpignan on a Sunday, where it's a short turner, and then to Leinster the following weekend. But we'll see how they get on there on Saturday night at home against Zebre in the Challenge Cup. Johnny, thanks a million for that. Good luck this weekend. Nace back in AIL action.
Yeah, cheers. We're down to Nina, who are flying. So yeah, be a tough one, but hopefully we can put in a decent performance.
All right. Well, very best of luck with that, and we'll speak to you again soon. For those watching and listening, the pod, stay tuned. I'll be chatting to Jack Crowley just next. Now, I'm delighted to welcome Jack Crowley to the RTÉ Rugby Podcast. Jack joins Munster's Cate Flannery, who I'll be speaking to a little bit later as well, to mark Pinergy's 10-year association with Munster Rugby ahead of their new 4-year sponsorship extension. Proud supporters of the Munster Boys and Girls Schools Cups, Pinergy continue to support Munster Rugby on their ambition to become a leading sustainable brand in world rugby. Jack, how are you? I was just talking to Johnny Murphy in part one of the podcast. Test rugby straight into the Champions Cup. It's never a quiet week in rugby, is it?
No, it's not, and probably wouldn't want it any other way.
The Munster you arrived back into is quite different to the Munster you left in late October. It must have been strange kind of coming back in the last couple of days, is it?
I think it's probably more exciting is the word I've been using in terms of the feeling that's there in terms of having Europe for this group. Is something that we're all buzzing about and excited to get out and see what we can do in this competition, because it's obviously a massive part of Munster Rugby's history is European rugby, and it's I think globally it's a competition that gets a lot of attention because of how kind of special it is and how special it is right through the season. So I've spent the last couple of years watching the knockout stages in the latter end of the season and being envious of those teams that are involved in it, just because of it's so special, and that's where you want to be playing.
Yeah, and it's funny, I think it doesn't necessarily matter what Munster's form is like. If you mention the Champions Cup around Munster players or coaches, like you're there, there's a little bit of a smile all of a sudden. People are perking up. I know, like, a cloud has kind of lifted in the last few weeks. The break kind of came at a good time, and there's maybe a bit more stability around the coaching setup that we're seeing now, and got a win at the weekend. But the Champions Cup does always lift those around Munster rugby, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, and I think it's that's probably something that's strong in the Munster tradition, and the Munster DNA is the way in which how high we hold the European rugby, how special it is to play against the French sides, the atmosphere and the energy that they bring, and then obviously to be able to play against the Premiership sides as well is something that You want to test yourself against the best, and you know, anything's possible in European rugby, I guess.
Yeah, and it's straight back in for you and some of your teammates off the Autumn Nations series as well. To look back on that, I suppose finishing off with the 22-19 win against Australia on Saturday to cap it off, it's been one of those campaigns where I think from the people I'm talking to, the outlook depends on whether people are a glass half full or a glass half empty person, where some people see three wins out of four, you know. Things are looking up. Other people are kind of looking at it a way of, well, there have been scrappy elements in it, and you know, like against Australia to pull it out of the fire a little bit against Argentina, there was a wobble after the first half an hour. How have you been looking at it as a squad?
Well, I think there's certainly no game that's given in the international season. You know, no matter what side you're facing, you kind of never know, because it's obviously you play each other only once that season. Obviously, the summer test is a bit different, but you don't know what to expect. You're dealing with the best of the best in that country, and you know, on there any given day that they could produce, you know, an absolute, you know, whopper of a performance, and I guess that's what tests you as a professional, is week in, week out as a group, how I suppose professional we can be with our preparation, with our mindset to winning and performing constantly week in, week out. And I guess obviously, you know, starting off the Autumn Nations, it was disappointing, as I'm sure everybody felt, and as they should. And I guess it's important to touch on expectations as well. You know, we obviously have massively high expectations, not just obviously internally as a group. We do always have massive ambitions to succeed in every game we're in. But I guess if you're an Irish person or Irish fan, you have massive expectations now in terms of when Ireland are going into a test match. You're expecting a top level performance every time, and that's obviously something that is a privilege for us as players to be in an environment where you have an expectation that you're going to deliver your best every time, and that's something that you know, kind of excites us as a group, is that there's you know, coming into each game, we know that there's, as you get better, there's a target goes on your back, and every team that comes to you wants, you know, ultimately to take you down. So I guess what you're kind of facing is you're facing each team putting out their best performance against you, if that makes sense, because they've targeted that game, you know, maybe from a long way back. So you're getting the best from each team. They've plans in place for a long time to try and beat us, and I guess that's when you can look at the game, obviously, like you said, the perspective of it wasn't a pretty game, but you know, there's also an art in winning, given whatever circumstances you're facing in a game, and I guess, you know, for the way that the game started on Saturday, for the lads to stay in it, stay patient, stay calm, and be able to slowly chip away back into trust the work we've done, and you know, in the end, the result was the one that was well worked for, but certainly satisfying.
How do you assess your own form at the moment? You looked like a man who was ready to really grasp that nettle when you came on Saturday evening.
Yeah, well, I guess just when you're watching the sideline, you want to kind of assess how the game's going, and you know, what areas are going well and what areas maybe could be improved, and then you look for opportunities that you can maybe go after when you do come on, and you're constantly trying to just get a feel of where things are at, and never being too fixed. Obviously, coming on, it's something that you want to be able to step into, is that pressure, and the challenging of how quickly can you get into the flow of the game. And yeah, look, I was excited because, you know, obviously it being 150 years, we were behind in the scoreboard, and you know, I knew how important for us as a group, we wanted to finish off the Autumn Nations with a win. And then also for what it would mean for Irish rugby winning on the 150th memory of Irish rugby and celebration of Irish rugby. So yeah, it was a really exciting kind of opportunity to be able to come onto the pitch and win in the end.
And I feel so much of the last month, from our side of things out here in the media, all we've been doing is talking about out halves for the last month or so. You're obviously in a much more sheltered existence in camp, but like you were obviously speaking last week doing media duty, and I think you actually summed it up very well when we were asking about all this stuff that, you know, it's probably an occupational hazard of being an out half, that it's the high profile position on the pitch. You know, everyone's equal, it's all 5 points for a try no matter who scores, but people have always spoken about out halves more. There's always been more of a light shone upon them. Is that hype and outside noise just something you have to grow to deal with as an out half?
Oh, I guess it's just because all out halves love the attention, don't they?
100%. I didn't want to be that blunt, but look,
I know
you said
you're
it,
going to
not
say
me.
it. Yeah, no, we all love being talked about, and yeah, no, yeah, I guess I think I mentioned it just a short while ago to someone else that the way in which the lads before us have delivered in the Irish jersey, in the Irish number 10 jersey in particular. Obviously, that's the topic we're talking about. You often hear about the kind of motto of leaving the jersey in a better place, and making sure that the next person is ready to take it from you and deliver. And I guess that's probably something that what makes it so special, this challenge or this opportunity that's in front of us now as tens, is the likes gone before. I mentioned Ollie Campbell, Dave Humphries, Raj Sexton, and forgive me for the lads I've left out that have all added to the Irish jersey. I guess we're fortunate that we can maybe take that jersey to a special place next. I think it's only natural that there is that noise, or I think not noise is obviously a word that makes it sound like a bad thing, but I think to be fair, it's the situation that's in front of us, so it's hard not to address, and it's one that certainly excites all of us, whether it be myself, Sam, Frawley, or whoever else it may be. I think there's that special feeling to the 10 jersey, and certainly you all want to be the one that is driving the ship.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose like the positive out of it is it's three players who are kind of fighting over the jersey rather than a head coach not knowing which person to hand out a jersey to. On the kind of the outside noise or pressure or expectations from supporters or media, are you good at blocking that out and just kind of focusing in on your job and the team's job?
Yeah, I think there's a fine balance in terms of you always got to be aware of the situation or the scenario you're in, because knowing that every time you get to put on that jersey is a massive opportunity and a privilege to be able to wear it. You want to be able to do your best in it as well and deliver for the team and the group's ambitions and goals. You want to be able to drive that. I think last week particularly was obviously one that had such a big meaning to it in terms of for us as a group. Being honest, I really think playing in those groups is something so special. And if you start thinking about yourself first and thinking, well, why not me? Why me? Or asking those questions and going inward on yourself, rather than thinking about what it actually means this week for the group. Going 3 from 3 after the New Zealand game, and then also it being the celebration of Irish rugby. If you started thinking about yourself, certainly I think that would be quite selfish. So you want to try and do your best for the group, because ultimately when you're having a beer together after in the change room, that's the special moments that you want to be able to enjoy as a rugby player. And And for me, that's the most important thing is putting the team first and showing I suppose what my intention is the team and I just want to see us do as well as we can.
Yeah, and don't worry, we'll be talking about you all again come January and February time when the
That's
Six
all right,
Nations
don't
rolls
worry.
around. Between
Perfect.
now and then, obviously, Champions Cup, and we touched on it at the start, but obviously before we finish up, it starts this Saturday, Stade Francais. Like, I think you only have to look back on last season as an example of, like, if you don't get off to that good start, sometimes you end up chasing it straight away, like that Bayonne game. You don't really want to be going to Cast next week on a Friday night, looking to chase a result. It all starts this weekend against Stade, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. They're an opposition that are unbelievable in terms of their loose ball play, their free play, and they're dangerous. They've got players right across the pitch that can change a game, and we obviously as a group here haven't faced them in a long, long while. I think it was the black jersey in like 2016 when we last played them or something like that. So it's been a while since we've played them. They're an exciting team. It's the first game in Europe, and I think we want to show our best hand, and we know it's going to be challenging. Like it is going to be challenging. There's no doubt about that. It's not going to be an easy battle. One we're going to have to fight for, and one we're excited though to see where we are as a group and really, set our stall out for the season.
Right. Well, very best of luck with it on Saturday. And I hope for your sakes as well that the weather is a little bit better on Saturday than it was last time in Munster
I
Stade
hope so
played each
too.
other. I think
I hope so too.
that one nearly got postponed. It was so bad, Limerick
Yeah.
that day.
Yeah, a nice dry evening would be good now. Cheers, Neil.
It's been great chatting to you.
Ciao.
All the best.
Cheers. All the best. Bye now.
Now, another Munster out half is with me, marking Pinergy's perfect 10 with Munster, Kate Flannery. Thanks for joining the RT Rugby podcast. But great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
In the men's game, Kate, the test season's just wrapped up. We're obviously on to Champions Cup this weekend, and I was chatting to Jack Crowley about that. For yourselves in the women's game, tell us, it's been AIL. Now we're moving on to the Celtic Challenge in the next few weeks, and that brings you right up towards Six Nations. Have those preparations for the Celtic Challenge, are they already underway? Have you already kind of broken off into your clovers and your wolfhounds?
They're starting now in the coming week or two. So they'll be on throughout up till March, as you said. And obviously the club scene is still in the background. So the way it works is if maybe you're not selected for a match day squad for a Celtic Cup, you get released back to your club to play IL. So there's a good balance there as well.
And that Celtic Challenge now, like that's, we're in year three of it, I'm right in saying, and it's expanded again. It kind of started out just as an Irish representative team, then you broke off into Clovers and Wolfhounds, and now it's the same again, but there's just more rounds of matches. I think up to 10 rounds of regular season games this year. It does feel like year on year this is all developing. Eventually, they kind of want to have a league there that can be able to rival the Premiership as such to keep the best Irish players here. How have you found it? How did you find it last year with the Clovers? Like, how much of a step up has it been from the run of the mill AIL weeks?
Yeah, definitely. It was a good experience getting to play with Clovers last year. It was definitely a step up. Even the way the training and the setup is run, you have the Irish coaches in and out helping and looking out. So it's definitely very professional. It kind of is like it does really feel like it's only just a little step down from the senior setup. And even the quality of games you'd be playing, getting to play teams from Scotland and Wales, it's so valuable as like you wouldn't really get that opportunity with club or even with in the Interpros. So I think even and as well as that, the training day to day, it's a step up again from the Interpros. So getting to train against girls from Connacht and Munster and everyone competing for spots, it just creates a really good positive or competitive environment. So I think that last year that was one of the key components to improving my game.
What's your situation then at the moment? I remember we spoke to you back in August around the interprovincial series, and Obviously, you're not a contracted player in the IRFU. Are you a student? What's your kind of situation there, work or studying wise?
So I am a student, a college student in UL. I'm in third year studying food science. And then I just work part-time locally at the weekend. So yeah, I'm busy out. I'm enjoying studying in UL, and it's ideal when all your rugby setup is based up in UL as well. It makes it just as easier.
Yeah, I was about to say you kind of have the work-life balance all right at the moment as a student based out there.
Yeah, trying to anyway. It's definitely can be challenging balancing work, college, rugby, especially when it comes up to exam season when college maybe needs a bit more focus. But having them all in the same area is definitely one thing that really helps. And having like most of my friends would go to UL as well and play rugby at the same level as me, so it's nice to have people in it with you.
It feels like a very exciting time to be a women's rugby player in Ireland. Like the game growing such a fast rate, you've the general results around the Ireland senior team obviously is the big one this year. The age profile of the senior team as well, where we were all talking about Aoife Wafer up until the day we were talking about Erin King, and these are people in their early 20s. You obviously were involved with the under 20s in the summer series as well, and there's an age profile on that senior team that is kind of getting younger and younger as the years go on. The Interpros this year felt like the bar was raised even higher as well. And even following on, the quality of the younger players seemed to be better than it ever was. To round it all back, like it does seem like a fun time to be a fun and exciting time to be an Irish women's rugby player.
Yeah, it's definitely very exciting. It's grown so much over the past few years. Even with the introduction of the pathways, such as the NTS, I've been involved with. It's a program where you get extra help in strength and conditioning, and maybe the aspects of your game where you wouldn't get time in a team training session to work on. They really focus on that. And even as you said, the like last, not summer gone, the summer before, that was the first ever under 20 Ireland team. So I think it just shows is that the quality of players and the amount of girls getting involved in players has just grown and grown. And even with the Girls Senior Cup with Pinergy, that competition now, when I was in secondary school, there was none of that. So I think it just shows with the that so many people are getting involved and the quality has grown and grown. And it's good because it just shows that in the Ireland camp, like it's so competitive, and that's the reason why Ireland are becoming a really competitive team, being able to beat the top ranked team in the world and qualify for a World Cup. It's just there's just so many opportunities to keep growing and getting better, and it's just so exciting when you think about it that I feel like the senior team haven't even reached their full capacity. Like there's still more space to grow and the amount they've achieved in this year.
Yeah, it really is an exciting time. Tell us about your own kind of journey through rugby. And you mentioned like when you were in school, there wasn't an option for a girls' schools cup. Can you tell us about when you first got introduced to it and how obviously some people will know that, your brother Jake, for example, used to be on the books at Munster. He plays with Ulster now, and your brother Alan as well had been involved in the Munster setup and plays in the AIL with Shannon. Like Munster rugby is obviously very much in the family.
So growing up, my mum would have kind of gotten us all involved in a bit of every sport and see what we liked the best. So when I was younger, my first sports I would have played would have been hurling and football. And then to be fair, I got into rugby when I was young because of my brothers. They both played in a club called Cofical, and I'd say I was about 8 at the time, and I said I'd give it a go as well and play with the boys because there was no even like seeing the growth now, there was no even girls team around where I lived. And then when I reached under 12 and I had to go to a girls team, luckily enough, a team called Feddert started up in Tipperary, which was still a good 40 minutes from my house, but it was the closest there. So I got to start playing there, and I loved it. I still played GAA then at the time. And then having pathways like the Munster under 18 team to play with and then go on to play as I do now in Limerick was class. So I think the It was I was lucky enough to be someone who was involved with rugby from a young age. I know a lot of the people that I play with, even in club, like they wouldn't have been introduced to rugby till they were much older. Like even take Eimear Constain, She was in her 20s before she started playing rugby. So I think definitely from a family background who are very much into rugby, like my two brothers who love rugby, that was definitely a big influence on why I started and I think why I still love it today.
And obviously, you're an out half. Jake is an out half. I know Alan tends to play a lot in the centre, but has played plenty of out half as well. I, for example, like I've just been talking to Jack Crowley about. We've been talking about the out half personality and how, out halves always have the biggest personality on the team. That's a lot of personality to be sitting around the Christmas dinner table in the Flannery household. I mean, there must be a lot of bravado inside in that house, is there?
Yeah, it is a lot, especially if we're watching a game on the telly. Like, I don't think my mom even wants to be involved when we're all there together. It is a lot of opinions, and but yeah, no, it is good. Like, they both are very helpful. Jake especially with kicking, for example, he do a lot of help in sessions with me for that. And even in my career, I would have played 12 a bit as well as 10. So. My brother Alan, who he primarily plays 12, he's been able to help me with that. So, as much as annoying as they can be at times, it's definitely been helpful.
Yeah, I imagine like it's a pretty phenomenal kind of support network to have if you're an up and coming player that, one of your brothers is playing professionally and another one of your brothers is playing what semi-professionally AIL. Like, I mean, there's a lot of qualities to be able to dip in and out of and ideas to just bounce around each other.
Yeah, 100%. Like I said, on the pitch in terms of kicking and then with analysis, it's handy when after a game you might be looking back at clips wondering, did I make the right decision here? Should I have kicked? Should I have kept it in hand? And being able to just clip that and send it on to Jake and get his opinion, it's good to get it from another aspect. And as well, another thing, even off the pitch in terms of mindset, resilience, maybe when things aren't going your way, being able to talk to someone who's like, my brother Jake, who's had a first-hand experience of going through tough times like in his career where he had to stay mentally tough and make changes. So whenever I come to a bit of challenge, it's good to get his opinion on it and get advice from him when he's first-hand experienced it.
Closing in on yourself then, we obviously spoke about how this is a very exciting time in Irish women's rugby and the big thing coming up is a World Cup next summer. You were involved with the Ireland under 20s last summer, yet to play for the seniors, but you were a training panelist for the Six Nations. How big of an aim is it for you to try knock on that door over these next couple of months with the Clovers and put yourself in a position at the very least to be involved in a World Cup?
Yeah, that's definitely a huge goal of mine is to get into the Ireland setup. And I think, like I said, the Clovers will be a huge component to that. I feel last year my experience with Clovers and getting that opportunity was one of the reasons I was called in for training panelists for Six Nations last year. So I'm excited to get going with that and try to put my best foot forward and. Like I said, any chance to get in, whether it's a training panelist or part of the squad in the Ireland setup, and just get the opportunity to show what you can do and keep improving. So that's definitely my goal for now.
Yeah, even like being even it being one of those training panelists for the Six Nations, is it a good reassurance to know at least you're kind of on that radar and you're getting a little bit of face time with coaches and they're getting the opportunity to see what you're doing, not necessarily in a match, but how you conduct yourself during the day, how diligent you are around your training, etc.
Yeah, 100%. It's so good, like to get a taste, and when you're in that role, kind of a training panelist, it kind of takes a bit of the pressure off. You get to train, and you try not put too much pressure on yourself in terms of selection. But at the same time, like it's just an opportunity again to get seen and show them what you can do, and just I guess have an experience that it just gives you a taste of it, and you're left wanting more. So. After that, it was definitely a big goal where it reassures you that like this is the path that I want to go and this is my goal. I want it. So yeah, it's definitely motivated me and just driven me on to keep getting better and get back up there.
And I suppose, I mean, like, in theory, all World Cups are equal, but when there's a World Cup happening just across the water over in England, like, it's going to be a long time probably before there's another one as close to here again. It's such it's such a draw, I imagine, to be able to get over there. It'd be so accessible for friends and family and supporters getting over to watch games over there. There probably is there a little extra special draw to being able to try push yourself for a World Cup over there?
Oh yeah, definitely. As you said, like being able to be part of it where there's probably going to be so much, like there'll be such a huge support network from Ireland traveling over to the games, as you said, because it's so accessible. And like trying to imagine being part of that, having friends and family around, it would just make it extra special. So yeah, I think the location is definitely something that would drive you even more when you know your friends and family can be there and you'll have so much support from Ireland. So it's exciting.
Well, who knows? For the last month or so, all we've been talking about is Jack Crowley, Sam Prendergast, and Ciarán Frawley. We might be doing a Kate Flannery, Dan O'Brien, and Nicole Fowley debate in a few months, potentially. Listen, Kate Flannery, it's been a pleasure having you on the RT Rugby podcast. Best of luck in the remainder of the AIL and the Celtic Challenge coming up in the next few weeks as well. And we look forward to seeing a bit more of you next year.
Thanks so much.